such a mystery.
Put on my blue suede shoes and I boarded the plane. Touched down in the land of the Delta Blues in the middle of a pouring rain. W.C. Handy, won't you look down over me? 'Cause I've got a first class ticket and I'm blue as a boy can be.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
With a significant proportion of Americans in Iraq working not for the military but private contractors, the insurance companies that provide their benefits are also being exposed to risks. Just in the last month, workers' compensation claims among American contract employees in Iraq have surged, so much so that some insurance companies are considering ending policies covering companies with employees in Iraq. Under U.S. law, private companies doing business in a conflict zone must provide workers' comp insurance to their employees, but if companies feel fiscal risk outweighs the benefit of underwriting such policies, it may force the U.S. to reconsider the entire structure of its occupying force.
New numbers from the U.S. Department of Labor show the unemployment rate fell to 5.6% in April from 5.7% in March. Employers added about 288,000 jobs, mostly in the low-paying service sector. Lee Price is the research director at the Economic Policy Institute. Price thinks Bush's policies are directly to blame for America's economic downturn.
They chose to give tax cuts to very high-income people and to corporations rather than giving jobs to people directly, to giving tax cuts to low- and middle-income people. There's lots of things they could have done to create jobs more effectively than they have done.
Despite April's jump in payrolls, President Bush has seen a net 1.5 million jobs evaporate during his tenure and is on track to be the first president since Herbert Hoover to lose jobs during his presidency.
As an HIV scare ripples through Southern California's adult film industry with five positive cases confirmed so far, thoughts of collective bargaining are not far from the minds of porn actors and actresses. Dozens of them are now holding regular meetings to draw up a list of grievances with the industry and plan to launch the tentatively named Adult Entertainment Workers Union sometime later this summer. Key to the drive are demands for better health care and disease testing practices, as well as a push for higher pay. As it stands now, adult film actors and actresses are paid per diems with no overtime, even though spending 12 to 16-hour days on the set is common practice. The last time porn stars undertook an organizing drive was in 1998, coinciding with another HIV scare when six people tested positive. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Analysis from the House of Representatives Government Reform Committee of Medicare's new prescription drug benefits suggests senior citizens may pay more for the medicines they need, not less. This month, a prescription drug card program was launched offering more than 70 different cards and plans. According to the committee report, some of them include hidden annual fees and selective drug coverage. And the report also found that the same drugs from Canada still cost less than the new Medicare discounts.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Writers used to sacrifice for their art, subsisting on stale biscuits and cheap wine, letting their health go as they wrote day and night. No such suffering for Carol Matthews, though. She's a British writer of what is called edgy romantic comedy novels aimed at young contemporary women. And rather than sacrifice, she has simply sold her artistic self to Ford Motor Company. In the latest intrusion of corporate advertising into every nook and cranny of everyone's existence, Ford has paid a pile of money to Miss Matthews in exchange for her pledge literally to write the company's products into her romantic novels. It seems that Ford is eager to pitch its Fiesta car to 28 to 35-year-old women on their way up the career ladder. Apparently, this is the very demographic that Matthews' books reach. Chick lit, it's known in the biz. So Ford has become a literary character. For example, in a special short story written for the company, she drops in a reference to, quote, whizzing around Buckinghamshire in Imogene, a rather snazzy Ford Fiesta, complete with 6-CD changer, air conditioning, and thoroughly comfy seats. Art meets ad copy, and ad copy wins by a knockout. Matthews, who also is appearing in ads for Ford, says she's not troubled by this corporatization of her work. Quote, I've been very pleased with Ford in that they haven't put any constraints on my writing at all, she gushed. Well, good gollies, Ms. Matthews, I'm sure they won't, as long as you keep writing breathless copy like that. But what have you tried to, you know, test your corporate freedom by writing something like, whizzing around Buckinghamshire, my snazzy Ford Fiesta sputtered and died on me again, just as the 6-CD changer went on the fritz and spewed blue smoke in my face. This is Jim Hightower saying, who would buy a particular car just because some writer mentions it in a novel? And Ford wonders why it's falling behind Japanese car makers?
Toyota owners, tired of paying high gas prices? Well, how about paying nothing? That's right. Toyota is giving away free gas for a year to 12 lucky winners. Plus, 1,000 more will win $50 fill-ups. Just come into your participating Toyota dealer to enter the sweepstakes. You'll get the very best competitively priced service performed by Toyota-trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and ask about our May tire and service offers.
No purchase necessary. Ends May 31st, 2004. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 year old with valid driver's license only. Void in Hawaii. Official rules at Toyota.com/owners.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, happy Monday, my friends. Greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom and the American way. Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, streaming around the planet on RadioPower.org. Beaming out from terrestrial radio stations from California to North Carolina. Streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system. With archives of White Rose Society. And you'll, you can find it all at TomHartman.com. It looks like the October surprise that Bob Woodward told us was going to happen. Remember that 60 Minutes show? Bob Woodward's talking to, Mike Wallace, I think. And anyhow, he says, and Prince Bandar, I'm paraphrasing here from memory, Prince Bandar said, we'll be sure to lower the oil prices in time for the election. You know, to help you get reelected. Don't worry, George. Everything's going to be fine. In fact, the in Canada News, Canada.com news service, the Canadians are, you know, significant oil producers. They use a lot of their own oil. And they're all scratching their heads. Oil prices, hear this from this article by Scott Hagen in the CanWest News Service. Oil prices have climbed 52% over the past 12 months. And 23% since the year began. That's just in the last 5 months. Defying observers who see no fundamental reason for oil prices to have stayed so high so long. Judith Dworkin, who's the chief economist at Roth Smith Energy Group, a Calgary-based think tank, says the current levels of price is not supported by the fundamentals. They're stuck well above expectations considering the state of oil stocks. Now, somebody's been manipulating the oil market. Might it be a couple of oil industry CEOs who happen to be president and vice president of the United States? Well, who knows? But what we do know, this in today's news, Associated Press, Dateline Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, this morning, just as Bob Woodward predicted, and Bandar, by the way, never denied when he was asked about this by Tim Russert on Face the Nation or Meet the Press, whatever their show is. Saudi oil minister Ali Naimi urged OPEC on Monday, that's today, to raise its production ceiling by 1.5 million barrels a day when it meets on June 23rd. Now, all of OPEC produces only 23.5 million barrels a day. So this is a significant increase. It will whack down prices. In fact, Naimi said that's exactly why they want to do it. He said, and I quote, "It is certain that the kingdom believes that increasing the OPEC production ceiling is essential to keep supply and demand balanced." Yeah, right. That's definitely what it's all about. Supply and demand. We supply, you demand. And when George Bush says, if you keep high prices high, right up through August, and then drop them in September, October, and November, it will take away from the Democrats will gain all this steam early on. You know, all through the summer, they'll be, the price of oil, look at the gasoline, you're being gouged, it's a Bush and his oil. And then you drop the prices in the last month and a half, 2 months before the elections, and they look like fools. Well, the problem is that from the time that the oil price of crude drops until the price of gasoline drops, generally there's a couple-month lag time. It's got to get into the system. It's got to move its way through the pipeline, as it were. It's got to get into the United States. It's got to get refined. It's got to get shipped out to gas stations. Now, of course, there are sometimes you see price increases or decreases that are a little more instantaneous. They have to do with people anticipating markets. But anyhow, this the major price, the Associated Press, he said, this being the Saudi oil minister, Sheikh Ali Naimi, he said the recent price increases, which have seen the U.S. prices rise to about $40 a barrel, were a, quote, major concern, end quote, to Saudi Arabia. He said, "We do not want to see prices rise to the level where they negatively affect the growth of the international economy." No, definitely not. Don't want to see that happen, especially not in an election year. Is it all about politics? This thing with the prisoners. You know, the Republicans are doing their best to politicize this, to say, this is about politics. Look at this. The Democrats are jumping on this. They're trying to make political hay about this. Rah, 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 you know, going on and on and on, that it's just all about politics. It's that we've got to pick on George Bush because he's a Democrat, and therefore, I'm sorry, because he's a Republican, and therefore, you know, making him look bad is going to make the Republicans look bad, and it'll give us an electoral advantage, and they completely miss this you know, reality. As President Theodore Roosevelt said, our quote for the day from 1912, Teddy Roosevelt, "Patriotism means to stand by the country. It does not mean to stand by the president." He said, he went on to say, "The president is merely the most important among a large number of public servants. He should be supported or opposed exactly to the degree which is warranted by his good conduct or bad conduct, his efficiency or inefficiency in rendering loyal, able, and disinterested service to the nation as a whole. Any other attitude in an American citizen is both base and servile. To announce that there must be no criticism of the president or that we are to stand by the president, right or wrong, is not only unpatriotic and servile, it is morally treasonable to the American public. It is even more important to tell the truth, pleasant or unpleasant, about the president than about anyone else. President Theodore Roosevelt, our quote for the day. So we have a question, really, I mean, whether or not this was an election year, of what's going on? What is going on? How is it that we have gone from on 9-12, the day after 9-11, 9-12-2001, being absolutely embraced by virtually the entire world, spontaneous street demonstrations in downtown in Iran, in downtown Tehran, spontaneous street demonstrations in support of the United States. The French running a headline in Le Monde, we are all Americans now. How have we gone from hundreds of years of being one of the most respected nations in the world in 3 short years to being one of the most reviled nations in the world? Could it be a failure of leadership that has nothing to do with partisan politics? The Post Crescent, a newspaper in Menasha, Wisconsin, ran an editorial today. Actually, it was last week. It was May 4th. Asking for more letters to the editor in support of George Bush, because they're getting such an overwhelming number opposed to him that they feel that their editorial page isn't balanced. He says, we can't run letters we don't have, since we depend upon you, our readers, to supply the letters. We've been getting more letters critical of President Bush than those that support him. We're not sure why. Gee, I wonder why. If you would help us to balance things out, send us a letter. Make a call or punch out an email. Read the handy box at the bottom of the page for more information. We'd love to hear from you. If you support George Bush, of course. Here we have, our Limbaugh alert.
Sending tribes, making money, selling lies. You might say, everybody hates my guts. I'm offensive, I'm a bigot, I'm a fraud, can you dig it? I'm a sexist, racist, homophobic, fat, pathetic cuts.
Yes. The liberals doing what they always do, and I've told you this, they always try to give me 50 milligrams of Vicodin instead of the 80s.
I'm a Nazi.
Yes, yes, indeed. Here we go on May 7th on Friday.
He's a Nazi.
That's right. The judge says, who died? Who died here? What are we investigating? We haven't learned anything here. In fact, this is not about learning. This is about these senators. If you put people in the media who want to characterize what I said, at least put it in context, you could say it also reminds me of things I've seen at a Britney Spears or Madonna concert and on the MTV Music Awards. Yeah. Well, we actually did quote him saying that. And the question, he says, who died? Who died here? Well, Rush, I'm sorry to tell you, but our troops are dying. We invaded Bosnia using the Powell Doctrine. Give the military enough troops. And not one of our soldiers died in combat. And there was fierce opposition to our invasion, and there were Islamic terrorists, the whole bit. We invaded Kosovo using the Powell Doctrine of overwhelming force. You know, Colin Powell learned from the mistakes of Vietnam. And we lost not one single soldier in combat invading Kosovo. And now we're at 700 and I've lost track. And then he goes on to say, this is the great conservative commentator, if you look at these pictures, you cannot deny there are elements of homoeroticism. He says, yeah, I've seen things like this on American websites. Oh, he has? Well, you can find these if you have the passwords on these various porn sites. You can see things like this. Oh, I Sorry, I don't have the passwords, Rush. I guess I'm not visiting the same sites you are. And her point was maybe these kids, the soldiers, the guards, whoever, who are a certain age group, we've grown up with access to this, who've grown up with that, are simply acting out what they've seen on these websites or something just for the fun of it. Yes, just for the fun of it. And so a reporter asked Scotty McClellan at the White House, are you gonna repudiate these right-wing cranks who are saying that this is just a college fraternity prank? McClellan, no. He says, actually, I got asked a question earlier today about that matter, and he says, and I addressed it then. In other words, he's not answering. He said, but the questioner says, but if you stand out strongly trying to let the Arab world know that this is wrong, and then you have the proverbial spokesperson for the conservative party saying this, doesn't that send a mixed message? McClellan, the president's views have been made very clear. Yeah. No repudiation. Who's in bed with whom? Well, Limbaugh did spend that night in the White House. Maybe we shouldn't go there. Although he is talking about loving homoeroticism on websites that he has passwords to. It's 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Stay tuned.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warming, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late. Now with new updated information. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Pine River, Michigan, where the abandoned Velsicol plant leaks cancer-causing chemicals into the water. It's a danger neighbors will be living with for years to come. The Bush administration says polluters no longer have to pay to clean up the mess they leave behind. Taxpayers do. That means less money, fewer cleanups, and more families left at risk. Mr. President, there is a better way. Make polluters pay. Protect our kids and communities.
When I think about getting older, it's not dying I worry about, it's living and being buried under a pile of medical bills I can't pay for.
Healthcare costs are soaring. Millions more Americans are uninsured, and those who have coverage are paying more out of pocket. Yet President Bush offers no plan to curb costs, and his new Medicare law would actually ban the government from negotiating lower prices from drug companies.
The cost of these drugs, it's very scary.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
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 Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be?
Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
You might have thought that I would be a little bit lazy. I might not notice, I might not care. Oh, but now you're...
And welcome back. And somebody in our chat room. Interesting, you know, by the way, the finest online discussions in all of cyberspace. 3 hours a day, noon to 3 Eastern time, while we're live and on the air here. Go to TomHartman.com, click on the chat room. It'll drop you over to the Democratic forum on CompuServe. And if you have an AOL or CompuServe screen name, just plug that in along with the password and you'll get in. If you don't have one, you can get one instantly at no cost. You don't have to give credit card numbers or any of that kind of nonsense. Anyhow, somebody said, what happened to the rumors, the stories from some time back ago that Limbaugh was gay? And I thought, well, that's interesting. So I popped open a browser window and just typed Rush Limbaugh gay into Google. And the first thing that comes up is a right-wing website, a conservative website. It's called Friends of Liberty, the Voice of the Right. And here's the article, December 8th, 2002. St. Louis man claims Rush Limbaugh affair. A 46-year-old music store owner from the St. Louis area, Elliot Sanders, is claiming that while a college student at Southeast Missouri University in 1971, he had an affair with Rush Limbaugh. And it goes on and on. Oh, interesting, interesting. Well, you know, so now what was that that Rush said when he was on the air yesterday? He said, see, this is interesting. He says, if you look at these pictures, you cannot deny that there are elements of homoeroticism. Homoeroticism. And he says, I've seen things like this on American websites. You can find these if you have the passwords to these various porn sites. You can see things like this. Very interesting. Well, moving right along here, back to the issue, is this a political issue? The Republicans are trying to turn it into a political issue so that they can do their world-famous we're the victims of politics thing and deflect attention away from what's really going on. But the Army newspaper, well, actually, it's all Army, Navy, and Air Force, called the Military Times. It's the weekly. It's published by the same group that publishes the Army Times, the Navy Times, and the Air Force Times. Those come out daily. This is the weekly. It's called Military Times. It's distributed on United States Army bases all over the world, United States Air Force bases all over the world, and U.S. Naval bases all over the world. The leading military newspaper for the United States Armed Forces. According to this story from the AFP, a leading military newspaper has said that U.S. Defense Secretary Don Rumsfeld set the tone for the prisoner abuse scandal in Iraq by refusing to give captives rights due prisoners of war under the Geneva Conventions. Now, see, this, in my mind, this is what it all comes down to. What happened in Iraq was set up by our government, and I don't think that it's Rumsfeld who's at fault here. I think it's George W. Bush. By George W. Bush himself saying, we can suspend the Constitution whenever we want. We can take American citizens and lock them away without access to lawyers for 2.5 years. No trial, no hearing, no habeas corpus, no lawyer, nothing. Can't talk to their relatives, nothing. We can put people in Guantanamo Bay. And we can say, no, they're not POWs. They're not covered by the Geneva Convention. No, they're not POWs either. They're not actually people charged with a crime. We don't have, they're nothing. We'll make up a category. We'll call them enemy combatants. That hasn't been tried before. Well, Goebbels tried it during World War II. But other than that, it hasn't been tried before. And we can just do anything we want. And you know, the guy at the top sets the tone. And here we have now the Military Times in their May 17th edition, just came out today, making an absolutely startling suggestion. Absolutely startling suggestion. I'll share it with you right after this. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass destruction. Stick around, we'll be right back.
Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
With a significant proportion of Americans in Iraq working not for the military but private contractors, the insurance companies that provide their benefits are also being exposed to risks. Just in the last month, workers' compensation claims among American contract employees in Iraq have surged, so much so that some insurance companies are considering ending policies covering companies with employees in Iraq. Under U.S. law, private companies doing business in a conflict zone must provide workers' comp insurance to their employees, but if companies feel fiscal risk outweighs the benefit of underwriting such policies, it may force the U.S. to reconsider the entire structure of its occupying force.
New numbers from the U.S. Department of Labor show the unemployment rate fell to 5.6% in April from 5.7% in March. Employers added about 288,000 jobs, mostly in the low-paying service sector. Lee Price is the research director at the Economic Policy Institute. Price thinks Bush's policies are directly to blame for America's economic downturn.
They chose to give tax cuts to very high-income people and to corporations rather than giving jobs to people directly, to giving tax cuts to low- and middle-income people. There's lots of things they could have done to create jobs more effectively than they have done.
Despite April's jump in payrolls, President Bush has seen a net 1.5 million jobs evaporate during his tenure and is on track to be the first president since Herbert Hoover to lose jobs during his presidency.
As an HIV scare ripples through Southern California's adult film industry with five positive cases confirmed so far, thoughts of collective bargaining are not far from the minds of porn actors and actresses. Dozens of them are now holding regular meetings to draw up a list of grievances with the industry and plan to launch the tentatively named Adult Entertainment Workers Union sometime later this summer. Key to the drive are demands for better health care and disease testing practices, as well as a push for higher pay. As it stands now, adult film actors and actresses are paid per diem with no overtime, even though spending 12 to 16-hour days on the set is common practice. The last time porn stars undertook an organizing drive was in 1998, coinciding with another HIV scare when six people tested positive. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Analysis from the House of Representatives Government Reform Committee of Medicare's new prescription drug benefits suggests senior citizens may pay more for the medicines they need, not less. This month, a prescription drug card program was launched offering more than 70 different cards and plans. According to the committee report, some of them include hidden annual fees and selective drug coverage. And the report also found that the same drugs from Canada still cost less than the new Medicare discounts.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Remember when old ones died and new were born, life was changed, disassembled, rearranged, we came together
Just to let you know, in the second hour of our program, Amy Goodman of Democracy Now! Is going to drop by, say hello, talk about her new book. It's Tom Hartman with you, 26 minutes before the hour. The Military Times. Let me just read to you from this article in the Military Times. It's not an article. It's an editorial. And again, my take on this is that they're pointing the finger at the wrong guy. Now, of course, the military, if they pointed the finger at George Bush, I suppose they could be accused of being partisan. But he is the commander in chief. Those three magic words. He's the guy in charge of the military. I mean, it's one of the specific constitutional responsibilities he has. He's commander in chief of the armed forces of the United States. It says so in the Constitution. So if you're going to go to the top and look for responsibility, where do you go? Anyhow, here's what the Army Times said. This was a failure that ran straight to the top. Accountability here is essential, even if that means relieving top leaders from duty in time of war. They referenced the photographs and the videos and Abu Ghraib prison. And how the folks at the Pentagon are referring to these soldiers as the six morons who lost the war, quote unquote. But the folks in the Pentagon are talking about the wrong morons, writes the Military Times. Responsibility extends all the way up the chain of command to the highest reaches of the military hierarchy and its civilian leadership. This is an editorial from the most widely distributed military newspaper. Absolutely nonpartisan. The entire affair, they wrote, is a failure of leadership from start to finish. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld set the tone earlier in this war by steadfastly refusing to give captives the right accorded to prisoners of war under the Geneva Convention. From the moment they were captured, prisoners are hooded, shackled, and accorded no rights whatsoever. The message to the troops, anything goes. And then they go on to point out, on the battlefield, Myers's and Rumsfeld's errors would be called a lack of situational awareness, a failure that amounts to professional negligence. The Military Times. Now, they stop short of calling for his resignation, but I mean, you know, what else is it? Now, here on the front page of the Wall Street Journal today, we have an article. Big story. Red Cross cited detainee abuse over a year ago. Now, the story we're hearing from Rums, that we heard from Rumsfeld in his testimony a few days ago, is, well, you know, we had a soldier who came in and told us about this about 3 months ago, and as soon as he told us, we started an investigation. It's still ongoing, and we had Taguba do his thing and this and that and the other thing and blah, 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 blah. And, of course, I haven't had time to read it, and George Bush hasn't wanted to look at it because he's been too busy taking more vacations than any president in the history of the United States. But here's what the Wall Street Journal says, this article by David S. Cloud. Front page, today's paper. Even before the war in Iraq ended a year ago, and well before U.S. officials have generally acknowledged, the Red Cross began periodically lodging complaints about the treatment of Iraqi prisoners in Allied custody. They go on to note, although Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld and other U.S. military and civilian officials have been... Now, this is about as close as the Wall Street Journal gets to calling people in the administration liars. Although Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld and other U.S. military and civilian officials have insisted that their first real indication of trouble came when a low-ranking soldier stepped forward in January, the Red Cross report indicates that the organization had been issuing warnings for months prior to that. And then, you know, now even that, you know, oh, just a few months, huh? And then they go on to say, the complaints, the first of which was lodged in March 2003. That's not months. Well, it is months. It's 14 months. That's over a year ago. Included a formal complaint to senior officers of the U.S. That's over a year ago. Included a formal complaint to senior officers of the U.S. Central Command last summer. More than a year ago, the article continues, more than a year ago, on April 1st, 2003, officials from the International Red Committee of the Red Cross, also known as the ICRC, you hear people referring to this on radio or TV, complained that coalition forces headquarters in Qatar about treatment of detainees. And the article continues, they get down here, the U.S. military was sometimes slow to respond to Red Cross complaints and ignored them in a few cases. In addition, commanders often took much of, by and large, the exception of the tiger cages. But even then, when the tiger cages were exposed in Vietnam, the torture cells that we were holding for North Vietnamese, we immediately backed off. We immediately said, oh, that's wrong. There must have been rogue elements in the military that did that. It wasn't Nixon's idea. It wasn't LBJ's idea. I forget who was president when it was exposed. No, this was wrong. But here we have the president of the United States saying, this is right, that we deny basic human rights to people, and then we expect, and I know right now some people are saying, oh, but they're terrible people and we got to be able to interrogate them, quack, quack, quack. Sure. And how do you want to be treated if you are in the United States military overseas and you are taken prisoner? How do we want our soldiers treated? You see, you get the kind of world you make. And more or less, in large part, with fairly steady progress for about 220 years here in the United States, we have been at least giving lip service to, and in many very real ways make, yes, we've had a lot of scripts and failures. I'll acknowledge that right off the bat. But nonetheless, I would say we have been step by step, steadily, we'll overlook the drug wars and the Iran contract. I mean, this stuff comes out. But steadily saying, we at least are the defenders of the idea of freedom and liberty. We hold this ideal that humans have rights and that governments do not have the right to trample on those rights without due process of law, that law being defined by we, the people, the holders of the rights. Until George Bush came along, doing the same thing. Now, down in Texas, in the jails in Texas, you had a situation where the United States had signed the Vienna Convention. The Vienna Convention says that if you have a foreign prisoner, they have the right to talk to the consular, to the local representative of the ambassador of their country. In other words, if you're in France and the French police arrest you and throw you in jail, and particularly if they were going to execute you, now they wouldn't in France, they don't have the death penalty, but let's say they were. I mean, particularly then. But even if you just get arrested and tossed into jail, according to the Vienna Convention, you have the right to be visited by the American ambassador or a consular, a representative of the ambassador, so that we, this nation can figure out what's going on. We can help out if that's what's appropriate. So down in Texas, George had an immigrant who hadn't been even allowed to visit to have a visit from the consular official of his own country. As they were putting this guy to death, George W. Bush explained that the reason that the prisoner had not been allowed a visit from the consular office is, and I quote, Texas did not sign the Vienna Convention, so why should we be subject to it? End quote. Rule of law! Federal Judge William Wayne Justice wrote, many inmates credibly testified to the existence of violence, rape, and extortion in the prison system of Texas and about their own suffering from such abysmal conditions. Heather Wosich talks about, in September 1996, a videotape raid on inmates at a county jail in Texas showed guards using stun guns and an attack dog on prisoners who were later dragged face down back to their cells. Torture in the Texas prisons? Now, our fearless leader has taken it worldwide. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number, by the way. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Stick around, I'll be right back. Mm-hmm.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. Its clinically effective formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of CarboBlocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the Founding Fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitsky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitsky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
The permafrost in northern Sweden is becoming less permanent as the earth grows warmer. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Some soil in northern regions has been frozen for years and normally does not thaw out even in the summer. That's changing in the subarctic tundra of northern Sweden, and scientists are watching new plants move in and methane gas leak out. Torben Christensen is a biogeochemist at Sweden's Lund University. He says the annual mean temperature of the subarctic is right around freezing. He says the permafrost can start melting if the long-term temperature goes up by even half a degree.
That's where the stability of the permafrost is on its edge, and you need very small changes in temperature to actually have fairly substantial effects on the permafrost.
A research station in Sweden has compiled data that reveal how warming trends have affected the permafrost. The Abisko Research Station is north of the Arctic Circle, and people there have collected climate readings for more than 100 years. Christensen compared records from 1970 to 2000, and he found some dramatic changes in vegetation during those 30 years. He says wetland plants have moved into areas where the permafrost has disappeared and native tundra vegetation was gone. The soil in the tundra becomes much wetter as the permafrost melts. Those wet conditions produce methane gas during the decomposition of dead vegetation, and methane is a potent greenhouse gas. Christensen and his colleagues say the observations at the Abisko Research Station might be a picture of things to come across the Arctic. If more permafrost melts, more and more of the tundra might start releasing methane gas, and that could magnify the impact of greenhouse gases on global warming. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Hey.
democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
I lived with them on Montague Street in a basement down the stairs. There was music in the cafes at night and revolution in the air. Well, he started into dealing with slaves and something inside of him died. She had to sell everything she owned and froze up inside. And when it all came crashing down, I became withdrawn. The only thing I knew how to do was keep on keeping on like a bird that flew.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Bush oversaw, let's keep in mind, the execution of 152 prisoners as governor of Texas. Didn't even read any of the execution summaries himself. He had all the papers that are put before the governor. The governor has to read them and decide, do I really want to put this guy to death or not? And George Bush bragged about the fact that he never read any of them. He gave them to his assistant, or to his in-house lawyer. I believe it's Alberto Gonzalez, who's now the guy who's the White House counsel, who everybody is saying may someday be appointed to the Supreme Court by this administration if Bush gets reelected and Rehnquist retires. And Gonzalez would make a summary that never lasted more than 15 minutes, a verbal summary. And he would tell the story to George W. And by and large, the stories had to do with not the criminal, but the victims. So, Bush never saw any reason to question any of these people who were put to death. And the Bush White House has fought hard, as has Heather Wosich points out, against the International Convention Against Torture, especially a proposal to establish voluntary inspections of prisons and detention centers in signatory countries such as the United States. Vigorously. No, we do not want to have laws against torture. 1-866-889-8894. Armin down in Florida's on the line. Hey, Armin, what's up? Got about a minute.
I got a joke for you.
Okay, it'll have to be quick.
What does it sound like when Bush and Cheney pour themselves a drink to celebrate the success of profits in the war on drugs of Americans?
I don't know. What does it sound like? It goes and goes and goes and goes and goes. Okay. Good one, Armin. Thanks a lot. Oh, my. We've got quite a crowd here. Quite a crowd. Right's wrong turn. U.S. conservatives are even starting to get worried about this. Conservatism has lost its way in the years since Goldwater, writes Mickey Edwards, the head of the Republican leadership of the House of Representatives some years ago, national chairman of the American Conservative Union. This is not right or left, friends. This is not even conservative or liberal. This is just right or wrong. It just really boils down to that. This is the Tom Hartman radio program, the True People's Radio.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
With a significant proportion of Americans in Iraq working not for the military but private contractors, the insurance companies that provide their benefits are also being exposed to risks. Just in the last month, workers' compensation claims among American contract employees in Iraq have surged, so much so that some insurance companies are considering ending policies covering companies with employees in Iraq. Under U.S. law, private companies doing business in a conflict zone must provide workers' comp insurance to their employees, but if companies feel fiscal risk outweighs the benefit of underwriting such policies, it may force the U.S. to reconsider the entire structure of its occupying force.
New numbers from the U.S. Department of Labor show the unemployment rate fell to 5.6% in April from 5.7% in March. Employers added about 288,000 jobs, mostly in the low-paying service sector. Lee Price is the research director at the Economic Policy Institute. Price thinks Bush's policies are directly to blame for America's economic downturn.
They chose to give tax cuts to very high-income people and to corporations rather than giving jobs to people directly, to giving tax cuts to low- and middle-income people. There's lots of things they could have done to create jobs more effectively than they have done.
Despite April's jump in payrolls, President Bush has seen a net 1.5 million jobs evaporate during his tenure and is on track to be the first president since Herbert Hoover to lose jobs during his presidency.
As an HIV scare ripples through Southern California's adult film industry with five positive cases confirmed so far, thoughts of collective bargaining are not far from the minds of porn actors and actresses. Dozens of them are now holding regular meetings to draw up a list of grievances with the industry and plan to launch the tentatively named Adult Entertainment Workers Union sometime later this summer. Key to the drive are demands for better health care and disease testing practices, as well as a push for higher pay. As it stands now, adult film actors and actresses are paid per diems with no overtime, even though spending 12 to 16-hour days on the set is common practice. The last time porn stars undertook an organizing drive was in 1998, coinciding with another HIV scare when six people tested positive. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Analysis from the House of Representatives Government Reform Committee of Medicare's new prescription drug benefits suggests senior citizens may pay more for the medicines they need, not less. This month, a prescription drug card program was launched offering more than 70 different cards and plans. According to the committee report, some of them include hidden annual fees and selective drug coverage. And the report also found that the same drugs from Canada still cost less than the new Medicare discounts.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Before we rush full tilt boogie into the 04 election cycle, let's hear a word from our sponsors. Yes, the good folks who pay for the campaigns of George W. and most of the Democratic presidential contenders should be acknowledged before next year's vote. I say we should highlight these corporate interests now, just to get a sense of who's buying what in our land of the free. Of course, the corporate big spenders and the politicos they purchase insist that nothing is being bought, that the corporations putting up $100,000 to $1 million each want only good government. If you believe that, Pollyanna, you should check out something called Internal Political Party Documents at this website, campaignlegalcenter.org. Here you'll find the smoking quid pro quo between the corporate contributors and the political contributees of both parties. For example, there's a letter from the Republican Party chairman to the drug giant Bristol-Myers Squibb requesting $250,000. Does the letter ask for good government? Not exactly. It encloses the GOP's health care proposal, asking Bristol-Myers for any changes they'd like to make. The Politico says to the CEO, quote, "We must keep the lines of communication open if we want to continue passing legislation that will benefit your industry." There's another letter from the Republican finance chairman to the chairman of Global Crossing, the corrupt telecommunications giant that, at the time, was pushing for a federal okay of a merger. As an ante, Global Crossing had pledged $100,000 to the party with a promise to hike it to $250,000 if the merger went through. Surprise, it did. So the finance chairman wrote back to the corporate guy, "I am taking the liberty of enclosing an invoice for the additional upgrade." This is Jim Hightower saying, this corporate money is not buying good government, it's buying corruption. To stop it, call Public Campaign, 202-293-0222.
It's difficult enough to work your way through this jungle called life every day without having to carry an 800-pound gorilla of high-interest student loans around with you. So just do what over 300,000 people have already done and call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. College Loan Corporation will gladly give you the advice you need while helping you look into interest rates as low as 2.63%, the lowest federal rates in 40 years. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Toyota owners, roll into summer with great tire service offers at your participating Toyota dealer. And keep rolling all year long with free gas from Toyota. That's right, Toyota is giving away free gas for a year to 12 lucky winners. Just come into your participating Toyota dealer, where you get the very best competitively priced service performed by Toyota trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and enter the sweepstakes.
No purchase necessary. Ends May 31st, 2004. Void or prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 or older with valid driver's license only. Void in Hawaii. Official rules at toyota.com/...
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live 57 markets across America, radio stations from California to North Carolina, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet from radiopower.org. The exception to the rulers, exposing oily politicians, war profiteers, and the media that love them. Amy Goodman's new book, if you haven't seen or heard Democracy Now!, well, odds are you have. I mean, this is just Amy and her program are just absolutely the best. And I'm very pleased, honored, in fact, to have Amy with us here today. Amy Goodman, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
It's great to be with you, Tom.
It's great to have you here. I have been looking through this book. This is one of the things that the title of the book, by the way, you know, I said the exception to the rule. This is your new book with your brother David. And it's... one of the things I really like about it is how you just lay stuff out. It's the same way you do your show. It's very, okay, here are the facts. Bang, 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 bang. And you don't even have to draw conclusions for the reader. It's like they're inescapable. It's just right there. For example, Iraq's death machine made in the USA. I'll let you tell us what these companies have in common. Bechtel, DuPont, Eastman Kodak, Hewlett-Packard, Honeywell, International Computer Systems, Rockwell, Sperry Corp, Tektronix, Unisys. What is it?
These are the corporations that have profited so handsomely off of the killing, made a killing off of the killing. And it's also important to point out, Tom, that as the U.S. government said, you know, they were moving in to topple Saddam Hussein, a tyrant who kept control of his country for decades. What the U.S. companies were, those very companies that shored him up over the decades.
Exactly.
It is very important to understand the U.S. role in all that has taken place, not to mention now, as they say, just a few minutes ago, in fact, George Bush over at the Pentagon saying that he has liberated Iraq, and you look at what's going on in the Abu Ghraib prison, where Saddam Hussein's torture chambers simply changed hands and became the U.S. torture chambers.
Yeah, it was a change of ownership, as John Smith said. In fact, that list from page 32 of your book are many of the companies of the 24 corporations that helped Iraq build its pre-Gulf War weapons program. It's absolutely mind-boggling.
It's astounding to know how this was covered up right up through the invasion of Iraq, because these are the companies that were listed in a 12,000-page report Saddam Hussein gave to the United Nations, a 12,000-page report that the UN had demanded from him, where he said they didn't have weapons of mass destruction. And that report was supposed to go directly to the members of the UN Security Council. Well, Colin Powell got the president of the UN Security Council, who was from Colombia at that time, and Colombia wanted a lot of military aid, to hand over the report not first to the UN Security Council members, but to the U.S., which absconded with it and went to Washington. By the time they came back to New York to give out this report, it had been edited from more than 12,000 pages to under 4,000 pages, lost 8,000. And in that 8,000 pages, yes, the list of corporations that had helped Iraq build its pre-Gulf War weapons program, from Bechtel to DuPont to Hewlett-Packard to Honeywell to Unisys to Sperry to Rockwell, some of the very corporations that are right now in Iraq making that killing.
Yeah, it just keeps on rolling. It just keeps on rolling. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you have a question for Amy Goodman or a comment. Her book, The Exception to the Rulers, you're on your Exception to the Rulers tour. I've been seeing you broadcast from various cities around the country. What a, Democracy Now! Is such a great show. I just want to absolutely plug it here and make sure. DemocracyNow.org is the website for it. Go ahead.
Well, Tom, thank you so much. The show is growing at an explosive rate. It is astounding, even us. We had, we'd begun with Pacifica Radio, which was founded 55 years ago by World War II conscientious objector who, when he came out of the detention camp, said there has to be a media outlet that's not run by corporations that profit from war, but run by journalists and artists. And that's how Pacifica was born. It grew to 5 stations. I come out of WBAI, Pacifica Radio in New York. And we started this daily election show in 1996, expecting to go only a few months until the election. But people were so hungry for the independent grassroots voices that we highlighted that it continued. A few years ago, we were broadcasting on a couple dozen community radio stations around the country. Now we are broadcasting on more than 220 Pacifica stations and affiliates, NPR stations, public access TV stations. We're on television, on PBS now, and on Free Speech TV, which is a digital broadcast channel, which is a broadcast channel on Dish Network, channel 9415. It's been astounding, broadcasting across community radio stations in Canada, across Australia, and in Europe, and we're getting 2 to 3 stations a week. It is phenomenal, and it's a testament to 2 things, I think. The negative one, it's a testament to the sound barrier that's been erected by the corporate media, not letting through the images and voices that have expressed dissent that would have saved lives. And it is a testament to independent media in this country and just the hunger, how people are starving for other voices.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's happening with other media of that type. This program, for example, has been growing substantially this last year. Not quite as rapidly as you have. In fact, we were observed and peripherally participated in trying to get you on NPR here in Vermont. You know all about that battle. Anyhow, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Dave in Eureka, California is on the line. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program. You're on live with Amy Goodman.
Thank you so much for being a hope for this country. I have come to the frightful conclusion that the sociopathic nature of our White House is so extreme that it's hard for people to even begin to comprehend it. I'm wondering why it is, though, this book, The New Pearl Harbor, Griffin, why do we have to hear about that at 2:30 in the morning on Free Speech television? It's highly credible, scientific, a college professor very objectively studying the facts. We have people in the White House that should be taken out in handcuffs for the role that they played in 9/11. Do you have any comments on that one, Amy?
Thank you, Dave. Amy? Hello, Amy? Oh, Amy. Amy seems to have vanished.
Hello, I'm here.
Oh, there you are. Okay, did you hear Dave's question?
And the question was?
He was talking about this book, A New Pearl Harbor, and said, he found it fairly credible. It's being marginalized as a conspiracy nut book, and my phrase, not his. And, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, we're very interested in taking a look at it. And as we deal with the prison pictures right now and the whole scandal that is erupting in Iraq, we are contending with that, and we do hope to take on that issue as well. We certainly have been looking at the lack of an independent investigation into 911. When you look at the panel that has been the commission that they call independent, that of course is anything but, they go to the White House to hear President Bush, Vice President Cheney, right, they were a pair, not testifying under oath, which means, of course, since they weren't willing to testify under oath, that means, what could that mean?
They could
the
say
only thing is that they did not want to tell the truth. And then saying it could not be recorded or transcribed.
And then they took the notes.
The commissioner's notes were then confiscated at the end of the meeting. Yes, a truly independent commission. 9/11 has to be investigated honestly.
This is mind-boggling. The contractors in Iraq. This is the second largest army in Iraq are private contractors, and many of these people are making $100,000 a year, $209 an hour. I think I saw in the paper last week, and in many cases they're armed. They're engaging in battles. They're doing work that are in some cases our soldiers are doing, and certainly in many cases soldiers probably should be doing. What's number one? What's the impact of that on the morale of the soldiers, who are being paid, you know, $15,000-$20,000 a year? And number two, what does this mean for American democracy? This privatization of the military. Amy, that's funny. Amy, if you're still there. Hello, Amy Goodman. Are you there?
I'm there.
You're having a little problem with the phone, huh? Okay. Well, you know, let me know. Hello, Amy.
Hi.
Hi. Are you? If we can't hold on to this, I'm going to have to let you go. Are you still there?
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Are you changing phones?
We're having a little trouble with the phone. Sorry about that.
That's quite all right. Tell me about your thoughts on the private contractors in Iraq.
Well, I mean, the private contractors, this story, we're talking about a growing mercenary army in Iraq.
Right.
We're talking about an army that is accountable to no one but to these private for-profit companies. The whole story of Blackwater, you know, the men who were killed, the four Blackwater USA contractors, hardly did people investigate what are they doing here. And in a war that is increasingly taking the toll of the lives of U.S. servicemen and women, the Pentagon is increasingly turning to these basically private armies, former special forces guys who make a fortune if they come to Iraq, but who are they accountable to? That is the absolute key question.
Well, here's one of the questions in my mind. To what extent might they be accountable to John Ashcroft as opposed to the Pentagon? I mean, I understand that some of these folks are actually working for the Justice Department.
Well, that's interesting. And even then, though, when something happens, they are not considered, you know, government employees, and so they don't get included in the same way.
Right, but if they're subcontracted out by the FBI, you know, for example.
And so even the Army and the military are getting angry at this huge privatization of the military, and as you raise, of the Justice Department as well. I mean, I think what George Bush is managing to do right now, both with the manipulation of intelligence from the intelligence agencies like the CIA, that has infuriated longtime intelligence analysts to the level of mortality and morbidity in the military families, hundreds of them taking on military officers in Fort Stewart, Georgia, months ago. They were so angry at a high level military officer, he had to be taken out by military security. The soldiers, the military, the intelligence community, across the political spectrum, George Bush is managing to unite people against him.
And against us, and against we the people, against the United States. It's 20 minutes past the hour. We're talking with Amy Goodman. It's the Tom Harbin radio program. Chris in New Mexico, hang on. We'll pick up your call on the other side of this break. Stay tuned.
Ha ha! I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America, Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
We could build thousands of new schools or hire a million new teachers. We could make sure every child has insurance. Instead, under George Bush, America is alone, spending tens of billions to rebuild Iraq with no plan for success. After 3 years, when is George Bush going to start taking care of America? Shouldn't America be a top priority?
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
He took all the trees and put them in a tree museum. And they charged the people $1.50 to see them.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 25 minutes past the hour. We're talking with Amy Goodman of Democracy Now! And author of The Exception to the Rulers, Exposing Oily Politicians, War Profiteers, and the Media That Love Them. Amy, we've got a couple of calls. If it's all right with you, we'll move along to them. Chris in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chris, welcome to the program.
Well, hello, Tom. Ms. Goodman. I love Tom's show because I always end up talking to my heroes.
it's very strange, the knee-jerk reaction you get out of the right wing. Every time the Bush administration screws up, there begins this hysterical shrieking that the press is leftist and Democrats are taking political advantage. I think it's worth pointing out that the Army Times, which encompasses the Navy Times and the Marine Times, certainly not liberal publications, and they're widely read in the military community, are openly calling for Donald Rumsfeld to resign.
Well, actually, in that editorial, I read that in the last hour, and they didn't call for him to resign. They just said that he and Myers bore responsibility for this.
Well,
that,
yeah, responsibility but I think they understand that they're not concentrating on political nuance in this country, but because of the perceptions in the Arab world, most especially the Iraqi street, we're not going to be able to accomplish the quote-unquote mission unless we can turn that around, and I think we've lost it altogether.
Yeah, it seems to be. You got a question for Amy, Chris?
No, just keep up the good work.
Okay, all right, thanks.
Thank you very much. And okay. It's a very important point. I think it goes to the issue of right now we're talking about people across the political spectrum who are horrified at what's happening. And I really do think that in the corporate media, I'm not even going to call it mainstream media anymore. It doesn't reflect the mainstream. When you had a media leading up to the invasion, more than half the people were opposed to the invasion, and yet in the four nightly news shows in the 2 weeks leading up to the invasion, only three of almost 400 voices were with anti-war representatives. That's an extremist media, and we have to challenge that. We are talking about those who are being iced out, not just being a fringe minority or even a silent majority, but the silenced majority, silenced by the large corporate networks that are beating the drums for war.
Yeah, well said. 1-866-889-8894. Our number, Florence in Grand Rapids, Michigan, is on the line. Hey, Florence, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tom. Excuse me. Thanks, Tom. And I want to tell Amy how much I enjoy her Democracy Now. It's just been a blessing for me because I live in an extremely conservative society in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Also, I'd like to suggest that given this group that happens to have power in the White House now, I think we are this country, and I'm going to be too old to even see it, but you people are young enough. I think everything's going to be privatized, the schools, everything, because I think Halliburton and Carlyle Group and all of the huge corporations want to just run the whole country under their auspices. Sounds dismal, I know, but you can just see the handwriting on the wall.
Yeah. Is there a question for Amy in there, Florence?
Just keep up the good work.
Okay,
well,
great.
Florence, I can see you on Friday because on May 14th, I'll be in Grand Rapids at the Fountain Street Church at 6:30. And in this exception to the ruler's tour, we are celebrating independent media and going around the country. So it'll be great to see you.
My only problem is I'm going to be in Santa Rosa, California.
Well, another time. But
you can't win them.
Anyway,
we're
going all over
the wonderful
country,
work, and I can't tell you how much I enjoy hearing all of these news stories because you never get them in whatever we call the press now.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Florence. And at that, I've got to thank you, Amy, for being on the program. The book is The Exception to the Rulers, Exposing Oily Politicians, War Profiteers, and the Media That Love Them. And the website for Democracy Now! Is democracynow.org. Anything I should add to that?
Oh, just that you can see at that website in democracynow.org/book the entire Exception to the Rulers tour. We're going to 70 cities around the country. We may be coming to a city near you, and you can just check it out there. And just good luck on your program, Tom.
Well, thank you.
It is so important that there are independent voices in this country being heard, taking on the media moguls like Disney that are trying to silence any kind of dissent, like Michael Moore's new film, Fahrenheit 9/11.
Yeah, well, we're doing our best. Thanks, Amy.
Thanks.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Hallowell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Thursday afternoon, more than 250 graduate students, undergrads, and clerical staff marched through historic Columbia University Library carrying signs reading My Research is Work 2, Union Now, and UAW on Strike. Tanya Sanchez is a striking graduate student in the Political Science Department. She describes what happened.
We had a big rally, and some of the other unions on campus, the staff workers and the transport workers, joined us in a sympathy strike. And we, you know, marched into Lowe Library, where President Bollinger's office is, and we made some noise, and we wanted to let them know that we're not going away, and we have a legal right to unionize.
For the past 3 weeks, some 1,900 members of the Graduate Student Employees Union, or GSEU, representing teaching and research assistants, have been on strike.
Thank you!
Support staff, who are members of UAW Local 2110, including Janine DeNovius, were docked one day's pay for participating in a solidarity strike.
The graduate students would be joining our union, so we feel that this is, there's basically part of our membership, whether Columbia admits it or not, so we need to come out and support them. In general, we feel as union members that when the university forces us to cross picket lines to come to work, that we wanted to send out a message that, you know, we stand united with them and that we're one union and that we don't appreciate anti-union policy from our employer, you know, in our workplace.
Columbia's president, Lee Bollinger, is refusing to recognize the union. Susan Brown, assistant president for public affairs at Columbia, explains the university's position.
Graduate teaching fellows and research assistants are students. They're not employees. Our relationship with graduate students is an educational and a collaborative one among academic colleagues. It is not an employer-employee relationship.
In addition to teaching lectures, TAs write grants, carry out experiments, grade papers, lead labs, and teach discussion sections in half of Columbia's humanities courses and two-thirds of natural science courses. Steve Twilley, a second-year graduate student in Italian, says the university works because TAs do.
We are workers, too, and just because we are also students, that doesn't at all get rid of the fact that we are workers and that these are jobs, and we don't have a choice to not take these jobs unless we're getting support from somewhere else.
2 years ago, university graduate students had a union election. Organizers believe they won, but the ballots were impounded when administrators appealed the election to the National Labor Relations Board. The appeal still hasn't been decided.
The unions united will never be defeated. The unions united will never be defeated.
Organizers stressed Columbia's stalling tactics won't be successful in breaking the continuity of the union.
We are not leaving until we have a union here!
With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner in New York.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I think it's time for a change. 'Cause I'm tired of these games. I'm gonna leave them inside. 'Cause I'm alright on the outside. And I'm tired of this rain. And I'm tired of the shame. I'm gonna leave it inside. 'Cause I'm
and welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 27 minutes before the hour. The president of the Associated Press, this is a fascinating story that thanks to Tom Seaborn at KGOE, our affiliate out in Eureka, California, for turning us on to this. The president of the Associated Press. Now, this, you know, the AP is big. I mean, the most stories that appear in most newspapers, whether they're local or national, originate with the Associated Press. The president of the Associated Press. Here, well, here's the AP story from Riverside, California, denounced by Linda Deutsch, Associated Press. Denouncing increased official secrecy, AP President and CEO Tom Curley unveiled a plan Friday for a media advocacy center to lobby in Washington for open government. He said, Tom Curley, the president of the AP, said, "The powerful have to be watched, and we are the watchers. And we don't need to have your notebook snatched by a policeman to know that keeping an eye on government activity has gotten a lot harder lately." He goes on to point out that at every level of government, records are being sealed and requests for information denied. Courts are imposing gag orders and sealing documents. He says the government is pushing hard for secrecy. See, I would go beyond that. I would say it's not the government that's pushing hard for secrecy. Because during the Clinton administration, there was this massive declassification of documents. It was absolutely extraordinary. In fact, a lot of people thought they'd gone too far. We were doing some research on a book on the JFK assassination, and what suddenly became available was just cartons, caseloads, truckloads worth of documents. But the Bush administration has reversed that. So anyhow, he says, the government is pushing hard for secrecy. I would say it's the Bush administration. Anyhow, he says, we must push back equally hard for openness. I think it's time to consider establishment of a focused lobbying effort in Washington. The article goes on to say, Curley cited recent intrusions on information gathering ranged from an AP reporter's digital recording being erased by a U.S. marshal at a speech by U.S. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, to a confrontation between a sheriff's deputy and a freelance photographer on assignment for the AP outside a Michael Jackson grand jury hearing. The photographer deleted digital images after being ordered to do so by a deputy. Curley points out, somebody with a gun tells you to do these things, and you have to do them, but that doesn't make it right. And he's suggesting that there needs to be a new voice that is speaking specifically to this issue. Andy Alexander, chairman of the Freedom of Information Committee, the American Society of Newspaper Editors, says Tom Curley should be applauded for sounding the alarm. We face a growing crisis of unchecked secrecy at all levels of government. And that really is the bottom line. As President Thomas Jefferson said, dissent is the highest form of patriotism. You can't dissent against something you don't know anything about. Government has to be open in order to be democratic. It just, quite simply, boils down to that. Government must be open. The New York Times, interesting story here. We've got a caller. Oh, Nathan in San Francisco. There it is. I'm sorry, I missed that. Hey, Nathan, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. What's up, Nathan?
Well, I'd meant to call a little earlier to catch you and Amy, but Bill Moyers had a thing that went up on Alternet, the media politics and censorship on Friday. Mm-hmm. And it basically, finally spelled out what I think a lot of us have been thinking, which is that the media deregulation was payment for the censorship we're now seeing pretty much across the board in the media. Sure. And I wanted to see if you and Amy agreed with that and if you had any thoughts on it.
Yeah, well, I would imagine that she would. I can't speak for her, but I certainly think that there was a lot of hand-washing going on. I mean, here we had this administration, which controlled the FCC, and Powell, Michael Powell, the head of the FCC, the son of Colin Powell, who's the Secretary of State, talk about being tied into the administration, and deciding, there are a whole bunch, actually not just the media consolidation, but there were a whole lot of different issues that would have affected the bottom line, not so much of the average mom-and-pop broadcaster or a newspaper, but almost exclusively the very, very largest corporations involved in this business. And the NBC, CBS, ABCs of the world, as it were. And beyond that, the Sinclair Broadcasting and Clear Channels and whatnot. I don't find it a coincidence that they behaved in a way, the media outlets behaved in a way that served the administration when the administration needed it, and then the administration behaved in a way that served them when they needed it. It's not a surprise. It's not even a conspiracy in my mind. It's just
a transaction.
Obvious. Yeah, it's like
when you go to the gas station, you buy something for money. But I wanted to ask one more question, if I could.
Sure.
And that's how can we reach people? I mean, there's media like your show, there's media like Amy's show, but how can we reach people who only watch TV?
Well, that's a good question. I frankly don't know the answer, other than encouraging them to watch, public television. I mean, you at least get some modicum. Although the pre-war coverage of public television, they had just an unending line of generals on talking about how the war should be fought and blah, blah, blah. I mean,
I stopped giving them money, and I encouraged others to do the same. I mean, they're just corporate media with ads every half hour instead of ads every 5 minutes.
Well, I'd say they're not anywhere near as bad, but but you know, it's a problem. It's a problem, and the problem began some, I don't know, during the Reagan administration, I guess it was in the 1980s, when Congress started cutting back at the behest of Gingrich and his buddies on funding for public radio and public television. Every other country in the world, every other fully developed democracy, whether it's Deutsche Welle in Germany or the BBC in England or Agence France-Presse or in, well, actually, I'm not sure if that's the one that's owned by France, but there is one in France. There's one in even in Italy. I mean, Berlusconi's having fits about it, that there's still a state-owned media that is independently run but is financed by tax dollars. And these media have traditionally played the role of being the last source of information in a democracy. And when we cut back on the funding to public radio and public television in the United States, and they had to start going out and begging corporations for money, I remember it was in the late 80s, as I recall, when ADM had that big scandal where they were busted for price fixing, and it was this big, huge deal. And part of the investigative reporting, as I recall, had been done by public radio. And all of a sudden, you know, shortly after that, ADM, Archer Daniel Midland, Farmers to the World or whatever it is, was advertising on, or, you know, sponsoring PBS. And I haven't heard PBS go after them since then. And it's just, you know, it's, I don't think it's healthy. I don't think it's good for democracy. And but how do you reach people who only watch TV? I guess you talk to them. You meet with them. You talk with them. You confront them. You challenge them. You help wake them up. It's what we all each individually have to do all the time. And if they're not getting their news from newspapers, if they're not reading the internet, if they're not listening to alternative media, Amy's program, this program, you know, Air America, whatever the other programs that are out there that are talking about what's really going on, then I think we have a one-on-one job. You know, it's winning the water cooler wars. We have this one-on-one job that we have to do.
Well, thanks. You help us a lot.
Okay. Thank you, Nathan. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. The New York Times had an article a couple of days ago. The title was, As Household Debt Rises, New Risks in Higher Rates. And I want to share with you a paragraph that Richard Russell put this in the Gold Report, the May 2004 issue of the Gold Report, which is a newsletter on these things. And Russell is a brilliant commentator. And he quotes this paragraph and then makes some comments about it that I'd like to share with you. This from the New York Times. A management consultant in Denver, Mr. Thompson, this is about a guy who bought a house, right? Mr. Thompson bought at $500,000 a townhouse last Friday in the suburb of North Cherry Creek. This is a suburb of Denver. As many other first-time homeowners have done, Mr. Thompson put no money down. Instead, he took out a first mortgage for 80% of the purchase price and paid the rest by taking a home equity loan against the new house. To reduce his monthly payments and to qualify for a big enough loan, he took out an adjustable-rate mortgage that requires him to make only interest rate payments. So here's this guy who has bought a house, no money down, which means that, you know, if he needs to, he could walk away from it. He doesn't have anything at risk here. And this is an increasingly popular thing to do all across the United States. And buying it with an adjustable rate mortgage, where the rates are down around 3.5%, 4% now, they've gone up a little. And to keep his payments down. Now, what happens? What will happen when interest rates go up? Not if interest rates go up, when they go up, because Greenspan has been artificially holding them low for at least a year. I mean, we saw the biggest collapse in interest rates after George Bush became president in, I believe, in the history of the United States. Certainly the fastest collapse in interest rates promulgated by the Federal Reserve Board. And, I mean, you could argue the Great Depression, you know, interest rates dropped. But we were following them. There was a recession, deflation. But in any case, interest rates will go up. In fact, they already are going up right now. Corporate rates are going up. You know, bond rates are going up. And because inflation is happening. And when these interest rates go up, what's this guy going to do with his house when suddenly he has to pay an extra $200, $300, $400, $500 a month on his mortgage? He's going to walk away from it. And what's that going to do to the, because he doesn't have anything in it, right? He doesn't have any equity in it. And what's that going to do to the value of housing? Well, if all of a sudden there's a lot of houses, say 5, 10% of the houses around, are, you know, people are just walking away from them, and banks are in a hurry to sell them to get their money back out of them, then what's that going to do to the price of housing? It's going to collapse. The other thing that's going to drop the price of housing is that a lot of people, when they're thinking about buying a house, are not thinking about what does this house cost. They're thinking about how much are the monthly payments. And if the monthly payments at 3 or 4% with an adjustable rate mortgage are, say, $600 bucks a month, they figure, well, I can afford that. Whether that $600 a month means it's an $80,000 house or $150,000 house, doesn't matter, because they're only looking at payments. So when interest rates go down, payments go down, so people can afford more house. And so what that means is that it drives demand, people for larger and bigger and better houses, and the price of housing goes up. And we've seen, I mean, here in the People's Republic of Vermont, we're seeing in the last 2 years, we've seen housing prices in some community, and the one in the community I live in, go up 24%. Now, that's not the rate of inflation. There's something at work here, and it's these rates being artificially held up, or the prices being artificially held up, because interest rates are artificially being held low by Greenspan. And when those rates start to go up, the housing bubble is going to pop. And when it does, you're going to see housing prices go back down to a reasonable level, just like stock prices did. But that reasonable level is going to be below the amount that a lot of people have borrowed for their house, which means that technically now they owe more for their house than it's worth, even if they do have some equity in it, which means that, number one, the bank can foreclose, because there's foreclosure options in most mortgage contracts that say if you owe more than the house is worth, the bank can take it. And two, a lot of people, and more importantly, a lot of people will simply make the decision to walk away from it because there's no risk to them. In fact, why keep it? I owe more on it than it's worth. And, yeah, it'll screw up a lot of people's credit, but, you know, these are people who are living on the edge anyway, in many cases. Here we have a situation where we, the people of the United States, owe collectively $22 trillion. That's the U.S. domestic debt. You know, people say, well, I'm buying a house. It's funny. I've been seeing these ads on TV for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Fannie Mae, we can buy a house, George. Well, no. What you can do is you can take responsibility for paying the property taxes on a house, and you can make payments to the bank. But the bank really owns the house. Until the day that the mortgage is paid off, you don't really own the house. You simply own the liability for the property taxes and for anything else that happens on the property. But the bank owns the house. And this is, you know, home ownership is at an all-time high right now, which you would think is a wonderful thing. I think it's great, but, I mean, it was very, very low in the early parts of the 20th century. But the caveat is that 20-30% of these loans that have been written in the last couple of years have been adjustable rate mortgages. They are going to shoot up when rates go up. People are not going to be able to afford this. And you know, if John Kerry gets elected president, he may inherit an incredible mess. And why? Now, why are the rates going to surge? Why is this explosion going to happen? In large part, because George Bush is spending the country into bankruptcy. It's just very simple. The absolute irresponsible fiscal policies of this government have created an incredible pressure for higher interest rates, because the nation is borrowing like crazy, both from the private sector, that is, you can buy a treasury bill, invest in the government, basically you're loaning the government money, and from outside the government. You got China owing $300 billion in federal treasury notes. You got a $524 billion debt this year. We have to borrow $524 billion. Well, when there's a lot of people trying to borrow money, competition for that money gets fierce and the price of the money goes up. So here we have in the our local paper here today, the Burlington Free Press, Alan Greenspan saying that there's going to be a day of reckoning, there's no free lunch, and what's his prescription? Does he suggest we should roll back the Bush tax cuts and actually have the government pay its own way? No, he's suggesting that we need to do something about Social Security and Medicare. The conservative agenda is revealed. It's not about smaller government. It's about starving the government of oxygen so that the programs that they consider socialist, like Medicare and Social Security, can be wiped out. Step one, put them in private hands. which then, of course, start raising the prices, and huge profits being made off it by the banking corporations who are giving huge campaign donations to Republicans and Democrats all across this country. Step two, make it unavailable to anybody who can't afford it. Welcome to America. It's 10 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman with you.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value. Absolutely free, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Climate change has caught the attention of Hollywood movie makers and Pentagon planners. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. When The Day After Tomorrow opens on Memorial Day weekend, moviegoers will see climate change on the big screen. The film depicts spectacular weather events culminating in a new ice age. Far-fetched? Not according to a recent Pentagon study, which looked at a range of climate scenarios. It included a possible future of large-scale disaster and social chaos. Ross Gelbspan says we shouldn't need these extreme depictions to see the dangers of climate change. Gelbspan is the author of a book called The Heat Is On.
What bothers me a little bit is that people are not being asked to look at the slow, gradual, on-the-ground climate changes we're seeing right now. What the Pentagon did that I think was particularly valuable was to essentially recategorize global warming not as an environmental problem, but now as a national security threat. But I also think there are a lot of things happening on the ground in a sort of less spectacular way that also are national security threats.
For example, Gelbspan says the world has consumed more food than it's produced 4 years in a row. But he says the media don't report a clear link to climate change. Take last summer's European heat wave, which killed as many as 35,000 people. Gelbspan says temperatures didn't cool down much at night, a sign of global warming.
So as a result, we had all these fatalities in Europe because people whose bodies were sort of heat-stressed by the daily heat waves didn't get the nighttime cooling to allow them to recuperate. That's one very vivid sign, and I don't think the press did a good job on picking up on that.
Kelspan says Hollywood movies and Pentagon studies might open some eyes, but he says a climate disaster is already underway. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 5 minutes before the hour. I shouldn't have said welcome to America. I didn't mean that to sound cynical. I meant welcome to Greenspan's America. The world, the con worldview. It's what's good for billionaires is not good for you and me. Here's an interesting thing: 62% of Americans hold the false belief that the recession that we're now apparently coming out of started under Clinton. It actually began in March of 2001. The U.S. economy, this is from the National Bureau of Economic Research, NBER. And they said, and I quote, the NBER's Business Cycle Dating Committee has determined that a peak in business activity occurred in the U.S. economy in March of 2001. Now, the president of the NBER is Martin Feldstein, who's a Bush campaign advisor and friend of the Bush family, former Reagan economic advisor. I mean, this is a Republican group. March of 2001, actually, it's a nonpartisan group, but, you can't accuse them of being Democrats. So anyhow, the recession began in March of 2001, 3 months after George Bush took office, as he was starting to push his economic agenda and his tax cuts and everything. That's when things started to crash. But why do 62% of Americans think that the recession actually started under Clinton? Well, because we've had a 3.5-year campaign by cons to try and convince people of that false fact. For example, on September 18, 2002, John King, CNN, said, the administration acknowledges the economy, as our poll shows, is the number one issue. That's why the president, in almost every speech, tries to remind voters he inherited a recession. No, he didn't. That's a lie. 5 days later, CNN's Suzanne Malveau used similar language. Bush took up the very issue earlier today, saying, reminding voters that the administration inherited a recession. Blah, blah, blah. And then Fox News, Sean Hannity, November 6, 2002. He's talking to Democratic Senator John Corzine. Hannity, All right. Let's get back to this economic stuff here. If the Democrats, first of all, this president, you know and I know and everybody knows, inherited a recession. Corzine, it wasn't a recession. Hannity, wait, yes, it was. It was a recession. Corzine, no, it wasn't. Hannity, 2 quarters. Corzine, it was slowing down. Hannity, no, it was by every definition a recession. So this president comes in like John Kennedy, blah, blah, blah. And then Hannity, clearly fond of the inherited a recession line. This is a little later on. May 6th, he says, now here's where we are, the inherited Clinton-Gore recession. That's a fact. On July 10th, Hannity, the president inherited a recession. Hannity, December 12th, 2003, they inherited a recession. They did inherit a recession. We got out of the recession. Hannity, January 6th, 04. And there's the whole point behind this ad, because the president did inherit a recession. January 1, 1504. Historically, in every recovery, because the president rightly did inherit a recession. And I could go on and on. There's a list of about 40 of me. All lies, my friends. The recession began in March of 2001, 3 months into George Bush's watch, as he started putting forward his economic vision. The normal response. This is Tom Hartman, the True People's Radio.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hart.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
With a significant proportion of Americans in Iraq working not for the military but private contractors, the insurance companies that provide their benefits are also being exposed to risks. Just in the last month, workers' compensation claims among American contract employees in Iraq have surged, so much so that some insurance companies are considering ending policies covering companies with employees in Iraq. Under U.S. law, private companies doing business in a conflict zone must provide workers' comp insurance to their employees, but if companies feel fiscal risk outweighs the benefit of underwriting such policies, it may force the U.S. to reconsider the entire structure of its occupying force.
New numbers from the U.S. Department of Labor show the unemployment rate fell to 5.6% in April from 5.7% in March. Employers added about 288,000 jobs, mostly in the low-paying service sector. Lee Price is the research director at the Economic Policy Institute. Price thinks Bush's policies are directly to blame for America's economic downturn.
They chose to give tax cuts to very high-income people and to corporations rather than giving jobs to people directly, to giving tax cuts to low- and middle-income people. There's lots of things they could have done to create jobs more effectively than they have done.
Despite April's jump in payrolls, President Bush has seen a net 1.5 million jobs evaporate during his tenure and is on track to be the first president since Herbert Hoover to lose jobs during his presidency.
As an HIV scare ripples through Southern California's adult film industry with five positive cases confirmed so far, thoughts of collective bargaining are not far from the minds of porn actors and actresses. Dozens of them are now holding regular meetings to draw up a list of grievances with the industry and plan to launch the tentatively named Adult Entertainment Workers Union sometime later this summer. Key to the drive are demands for better health care and disease testing practices, as well as a push for higher pay. As it stands now, adult film actors and actresses are paid per diems with no overtime, even though spending 12 to 16-hour days on the set is common practice. The last time porn stars undertook an organizing drive was in 1998, coinciding with another HIV scare when six people tested positive. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Analysis from the House of Representatives Government Reform Committee of Medicare's new prescription drug benefits suggests senior citizens may pay more for the medicines they need, not less. This month, a prescription drug card program was launched offering more than 70 different cards and plans. According to the committee report, some of them include hidden annual fees and selective drug coverage. And the report also found that the same drugs from Canada still cost less than the new Medicare discounts.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Writers used to sacrifice for their art, subsisting on stale biscuits and cheap wine, letting their health go as they wrote day and night. No such suffering for Carol Matthews, though. She's a British writer of what is called edgy romantic comedy novels aimed at young contemporary women. And rather than sacrifice, she has simply sold her artistic self to Ford Motor Company. In the latest intrusion of corporate advertising into every nook and cranny of everyone's existence, Ford has paid a pile of money to Miss Matthews in exchange for her pledge literally to write the company's products into her romantic novels. It seems that Ford is eager to pitch its Fiesta car to 28 to 35-year-old women on their way up the career ladder. Apparently, this is the very demographic that Matthews' books reach. Chick lit, it's known in the biz. So Ford has become a literary character. For example, in a special short story written for the company, she drops in a reference to, quote, whizzing around Buckinghamshire in Imogene, a rather snazzy Ford Fiesta complete with 6 CD changer, air conditioning, and thoroughly comfy seats. Art meets ad copy, and ad copy wins by a knockout. Matthews, who also is appearing in ads for Ford, says she's not troubled by this corporatization of her work. Quote, I've been very pleased with Ford in that they haven't put any constraints on my writing at all, she gushed. Well, good gollies, Ms. Matthews, I'm sure they won't, as long as you keep writing breathless copy like that. But what have you tried to, you know, test your corporate freedom by writing something like, whizzing around Buckinghamshire, my snazzy Ford Fiesta sputtered and died on me again, just as the 6 CD changer went on the fritz and spewed blue smoke in my face. This is Jim Hightower saying, who would buy a particular car just because some writer mentions it in a novel? And Ford wonders why it's falling behind Japanese car makers?
Toyota owners, tired of paying high gas prices? Well, how about paying nothing? That's right. Toyota is giving away free gas for a year to 12 lucky winners. Plus, 1,000 more will win $50 fill-ups. Just come into your participating Toyota dealer to enter the sweepstakes. You'll get the very best competitively priced service performed by Toyota-trained technicians using genuine Toyota parts. Come in today and ask about our main tire and service offers.
No purchase necessary. Ends May 31st, 2004. Void where prohibited. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 or older with valid driver's license only. Void in Hawaii. Official rules at Toyota.com/owners.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
When we talk about war, we're really talking about peace.
Yes, indeed, friends. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. When we talk about war, I just have to hear that again. I'm sorry.
When we talk about war, we're really talking about peace.
Yeah, right. Yes, indeed. Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 7 minutes past the hour. And according to John Zogby, you know, the pollster, he's become the new, what was his name, Elmo Roper, I think it was, you know, he's the kind of the dean of American pollsters these days, doing polls all over the world. According to John Zogby, I won't give you the punchline yet. He starts. This is his Sunday, May 9th, yesterday's blog, you know, or his note. And he says, I have made a career of taking bungee jumps in my election calls. Sometimes I haven't had a helmet and I've gotten a little scratched, but here is my jump for 2004. Here's the prediction from John Zogby, America's premier pollster. And I quote, John Kerry will win the election. End quote. And he goes on to say, and if he doesn't, it will be because he blew it. There are four major reasons for my assertion. First, my most recent poll, April 12th through the 15th, shows bad re-election numbers for an incumbent president. He talks about what those are. He says, significantly, only 44% of people feel that the country is headed in the right direction. Only 43% believe that President Bush deserves to be re-elected, compared to 51% who say it's time for someone new. Anyone. Well, Benny. This particular someone, I guess. In that same poll, Kerry leads by 17 points in the blue states that voted for Al Gore in 2000, while Bush leads by only 10 points in the red states that he won 4 years ago. Second, there are very few undecided voters for this early in a campaign. Historically, the majority of undecideds break to the challenger against an incumbent. The reasons are not hard to understand. Voters have already made a judgment about the better-known incumbent and are looking for an alternative. And he goes on, the story continues, but the bottom line here, John Zogby is saying, John Kerry, he's going to win it. This election is his to lose. His to lose. Well, what do you think about that, George?
There's an old saying in Tennessee, I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, fool me once, shame on you. If fool me, you can't get fooled again.
Yeah, you definitely can't get fooled again, yeah. That's, yes. The Guardian, Philip James writing in The Guardian. Well, actually, before I get to that, let me just finish this thing with the election, although it has to do with Cheney. Here's Ralph Nader, if you are listening.
Ralph, if you're listening, I know we've invited you on the show a few times, and you're afraid that some liberal talk show host is going to make fun of you the way that happened to you on Air America. It's not going to happen here. But anyway, Ralph,
if you happen to be listening, here is how Ralph Nader can run for president as aggressively as he wants, get his campaign message out there, get as many votes as he wants, and still make sure that George Bush is defeated. You think it's impossible? It's not. In fact, it would actually be very easy. No, he doesn't have to pull out at the last minute. This isn't the votus interruptus strategy. No, he doesn't have to only do strategic, you know, only run in the states that aren't in play. No, he can run an aggressive campaign in every state in the union. And every vote that is a vote for Ralph Nader can be counted as a vote for Ralph Nader toward federal election funds or matching funds or, you know, brownie points or credits or whatever. They will be counted. And yet, those votes can help elect John Kerry. Now, how can that be? Most people are scratching their heads right now going, wait a minute, I don't understand. Here's how it works. Very straightforward. When you vote for President of the United States, you're not voting for the President of the United States. That's not how they set it up. When the United States was first formed, there were actually four different groups that were put together in four different ways to constitute the three branches of government. The Supreme Court is nominated by the executive branch and confirmed by the Senate. The House of Representatives was directly elected by the people. And the number of representatives that each state has is a function of the population of that state. So big states had a lot of representatives, small states had very few. The senators at the founding of this country were appointed to the United States Senate by each state, and it was up to the state how they wanted to do it. So in some states, the governor would decide who would be the two people that he would send off as the senators from that state. In other states, the Senate of the state would decide who the senators were going to be. In some states, the House of Representatives and the Senate together would decide who the state was going to be, who the senators were going to be. It was different in every different state. I mean, there were a few that did the same way, but you know, basically what it came down to was that it was the political machines that appointed the senators. Many people don't realize this. Senators were not, we did not have the right to vote for senators at the founding of this country. And the Senate had become such a corrupt body by the 1880s, 1890s, the Gilded Age, so corrupted by corporate money. Rockefeller, Carnegie, Mellon, on and on. It had become so corrupted that the progressive and populist movement rose out of that time and said, we want direct election of the Senate. We want to be able to vote for the senators. We, the people. And this was a huge issue starting around 1890, late 1880s, 1886, 1887. And all the way up to 1917 when it was passed, we actually amended the Constitution of the United States to provide for the direct election of United States senators. And this was the result of the progressive populist movement. This was the result of people like you and me saying, we want to change things. We'd like to have more say in our government. Okay, so there you got the courts and you got the legislative branch. The legislative branch is elected. So now when you go in and you vote, of course you can't vote for the Supreme Court, but you can vote for your senator, and you're actually voting for your senator. And you can vote for your congressman or woman, and you're actually voting for that person. But when you go into the booth and you see the name George Bush or John Kerry or Ralph Nader or others, Judge Roy Moore, on the ticket, and you push that button, you're not actually pushing the button for that person. Because we do not directly elect the president in the United States. In fact, I mean, this is what the Bush v. Gore lawsuit ultimately ruled. Scalia in his ruling on Bush v. Gore, the 2000 lawsuit that stopped the recount of the vote in the state of Florida, Scalia said, there is no right enshrined in the Constitution for the people to vote for President of the United States. You and I do not have the right to vote for President of the United States. What we have the right to vote for are electors, people who will act as our representatives and go to Washington, D.C. and cast their vote for President of the United States. Because the president is elected by the Electoral College, not by you and me. And the idea when the country was first started was that the Electoral College would be made up of people who were wise and intelligent and knowledgeable, and they really understood the issues and very thoughtful. This all grew out of Alexander Hamilton's notion and John Adams' notion that there needed to be a ruling elite in America. You just can't trust the rabble with some decisions. And the assumption when the Constitution was first put together, and even in 1804 when it was amended, well, actually not then, but when the Constitution was first put together, the assumption was that there would not be political parties. And so the electors would not be beholden to anybody. They would simply go to Washington and they would choose the right person. And so when you voted for an elector, you weren't voting for a person for president. You were voting for a local person to exercise his wisdom as to who would be the best candidate. And you were just trusting that that local person would make the right decision. And so in the first few elections in the United States, people didn't vote for president of the United States. They voted for electors. Actually, the first one, George Washington, wasn't even a vote. I mean, he was essentially elected by the House and Senate. The second, John Adams, was elected by electors, and Thomas Jefferson was his vice president. So whoever got the most votes was president. Whoever got the second most votes was vice president from the electors. It was Adams and Jefferson. Well, then Adams and Jefferson had a falling out, and then Jefferson, you know, the whole thing with what's his name, Burr and the whole mess there and the vote of 1800 and Adams. And so in 1804, they amended the Constitution to essentially say that the electors could be representatives of political parties, as it were, that you could vote for an elector and the elector could go in. So anyhow, here's the bottom line. Here's how it works. If Ralph Nader... See, in each state where Ralph Nader gets on the ballot, he has the right to name an elector. And when you're, or a number of electors, depending on the size of the state, you have as many electors as there are combined representatives and senators. So there's 524? I forget how many members of the House of Representatives there are. 435 plus 100 senators? Is it 535? I think that's right. Anyhow, that's how many electors there are. And each state has a number of electors equal to their members of the House of Representatives plus the two senators that they have. And so in each state, Ralph Nader gets to appoint a certain number of people equal to the number of electors in that state to be his electors. If he was to pick the exact same people as John Kerry picks, then people could go into the voting booth and they could vote for Ralph Nader. It would be recorded as a vote for Ralph Nader because that's how we've been doing it since 1804. And yet Ralph Nader's electors would be Kerry's electors. So Ralph Nader could get all the vote. He could get all the matching funds. He could get all the bennies. He could get all the brownie points. And he could make sure that John Kerry becomes president. He could be a kingmaker. I mean, this could be an extraordinary thing for the United States. An extraordinary thing for the electoral process. Here's your opportunity, Ralph. Here's your opportunity. Just pick the right electors. Very simple. Very straightforward. Let's see if he does it. 20 minutes past the hour. It's Tom Hartman with you. In the place where smart people get their news. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need?
Problem of Ralph Nader's electoral strategy, his campaign strategy. Well, not necessarily his campaign strategy, his electoral. If Ralph Nader simply appointed the electors that the Democratic Party has already proclaimed it's going to appoint for John Kerry as his electors, then his votes would be counted as his votes, and yet the electors would vote for John Kerry because they are pre-pledged to John Kerry. I mean, theoretically, they could say, well, I'll vote for Ralph Nader too, but they would have gotten so many more votes for themselves on behalf of Kerry that it would just be the rational thing to do. And this is like a form of instant runoff voting. You know, it's at least aggregated voting. So you'll hear more about that in the future. I'm going to continue to push for that. But in the meantime, here, Philip James in The Guardian comes up with a strategy that he thinks that Kerry can use to bring down George W. Bush. He says, why Kerry must target Cheney. And fascinating insight. It's Philip James in The Guardian, Tuesday, May 4th. The more that is unearthed about the march to war in Iraq, the more it becomes clear that the vice president, Dick Cheney, is the puppet master in the Bush White House. Senator John Kerry must make ridding the White House of Dick Cheney as central to his campaign as replacing President George Bush. In other words, don't run against Bush, run against Cheney. And in fact, you know, if you look at the polls, Dick Cheney has real substantial negative numbers. Now, usually that's not a problem. You know, the vice president is viewed as just kind of a bumbling guy, Jerry Ford, who really, I mean, you know, I don't think anybody was really worried about the fact that while George Herbert Walker Bush was president, the vice president didn't know how to spell potato. Dan Quayle, yeah, he's got an IQ that's close to his body temperature, maybe not quite. But, we weren't real worried about that. It was kind of just embarrassing, discouraging, saddening. But Dan Quayle didn't really do much of anything other than his counsel on competitiveness. You know, he started taking apart regulations that protected, but he really didn't do that much. I mean, he did some harm to American democracy, but not a great deal. Dick Cheney, on the other hand, has been active in a way that is absolutely unprecedented. We have never seen, never before in the history of the United States has a vice president been so active. It just hasn't happened. Vice presidents have always taken their constitutionally mandated role. Now, keep in mind, according to the Constitution, the vice president is not part of the executive branch. The executive branch is the president and those persons in his cabinet whom he appoints and who are, you know, nominated and who are approved by the Senate. The vice president is technically part of the legislative branch because the vice president's two constitutional duties are, number one, to serve as president of the Senate, in other words, to convene the Senate and to break votes in the event of a tie, because there's an even number of senators, two from each state, to be president of the Senate, number one, and number two, to periodically inquire about the health of the president. Is the president too over the top? This is probably something George Herbert Walker Bush should have done more often during the last year of Reagan's presidency. He might have ended up president a little sooner. It's pretty clear now in retrospect that Reagan was already gone But that's a whole other issue. So anyhow, here we have Philip James in The Guardian. The Brits are offering us advice on how to you know, offering Kerry advice on how to do the election, and it seems actually like fairly good advice. He talks about how Bob Woodward's book, his book Plan of Attack, just kind of lays this stuff out. Just here's the story, guys. Colin Powell says that Dick Cheney was fixated to the point of obsession on Saddam Hussein. Now, why would he be fixated to the point of obsession? Well, because Dick Cheney was the Secretary of Defense during the first Gulf War. He had the job that Don Rumsfeld has right now. And while he held that job as Secretary of Defense during the first Gulf War, he was pushing very, very hard to not stop at the border of Iraq. He said to George Herbert Walker Bush, we've got to go all the way to Baghdad. We've got to take this guy out. We've got to take the country. Look at all the oil there. And George Herbert Walker Bush said, yeah, and look at all the Muslims there. You got the Shiites in the south. You got the Sunnis in the north. You got the Kurds way up in the north. They are not going to be happy. They're going to fight with each other. We're going to end up with a civil war. The country's more stable, even if it's not the kind of government we would like to have, with Saddam Hussein running it, than if we go in and kick over the pottery. You got to let these things organically happen. There needs to be an internal coup. We need to support that. Or you need to support the people rising up. And Bush Sr. did tell the Shiites in the south, rise up against him. If you're successful, we'll help you. Well, they didn't hear that if you're successful part. And so they rose up against Saddam, and Saddam killed 200,000-300,000 of them, thus the mass graves. And George Sr. said, oops, I guess you didn't hear me say, if you're successful, I'll help you. So we stood on the sidelines and watched as they got slaughtered. And this just made Cheney crazy. Cheney so wanted to take Iraq that, as Colin Powell says, from day one, from the day that he became Vice President of the United States, in fact, probably from the day that George Walker Bush, George W. Bush, appointed him head of the selection committee to figure out who should be his vice president, and Dick Cheney started interviewing potential vice presidential candidates, probably from that day when Cheney said, well, I'm in charge of coming up with who's going to be vice president. I'll bet I'm the best person for this job. From that day until he became appointed, you know, he was nominated in the election. I mean, probably from that day, probably from the end of the Gulf War, he had been obsessed with this. Fixated to the point of obsession, Colin Powell's expression. You got Dick Cheney over the top, obsessed with Iraq. And then you got George Jr. going, you know, my daddy lost that war because he didn't make it last long enough. He was real popular during the war, but then when the war ended, people started thinking about their pocketbooks again. And you got this conservative economic policies that are just hurting people in the middle class. Not that we give a damn about that, but it's happening, so you got to have something to distract them. The Romans called it bread and circus. And George W. was thinking, well, you know, if I got a good war going on, that'll keep the people riled up. That'll keep them distracted. Plus, think of all that oil. Think of all that oil. All that oil in the Middle East. I mean, it's incredible when you think about it. How much oil is in the Middle East? How much oil is in Iraq? As Dick Cheney, you know, said,
Iraq sits on top of 10% of the world's oil reserves. Very significant reserve, second only to Saudi Arabia.
Second only in the entire world to Saudi Arabia. Yeah. So here we have this dynamic duo. Both of them obsessed with Iraq. The main hotel in Baghdad has a mosaic tile floor with a picture of George Herbert Walker Bush's face that you have to walk over as you walk into the hotel, a source of enduring aggravation to the Bush family. And so here, you know, you get Cheney, you get Rumsfeld, you got the neocons who think that the way to make America secure is to make America an empire. But the puppet master behind it all, apparently, if you read Woodward's book, and I have to confess I haven't, the thing is huge, and I just, you know, I haven't had the time, but if you read Woodward's book, according to Philip James in The Guardian, who has read it, you get it, that Cheney is the puppet master. And that Bush is, you know, talking a good line for the benefit of Bob Woodward, but Cheney's the puppet master here. In fact, he goes on to say, from Iraq to tax cuts, he set the agenda. Cheney was the one who, you know, bailed out of Halliburton with, what, $20, $30 million? Well, yeah, of course he would want tax cuts for the very rich. What's good for multimillionaires is good for Dick Cheney. May not be good for you or me, but it's good for Dick Cheney. He goes on to say, while being careful never to upstage Mr. Bush in public, Dick Cheney has steered the political direction of the presidency from day one. He urged Bush not to be cowed into a timid first term, despite being the first president elected without securing the most votes in over a century. Did you know that, by the way? I didn't know that before I read that. I knew that there had been several presidents who were elected by the Electoral College who had lost the popular vote but won the Electoral College. I didn't realize it had been 100 years since it had happened. You have to go back and look and see who the presidents were. Just as America slipped into recession, Philip James notes, Cheney advocated forcing a vote on a mammoth tax cut that created the largest budget deficit in history. Well, Cheney doesn't have to take the heat for it. It'll be George Bush's. He insisted on convening an energy task force that met in secret and released no details of its deliberations, made up of Bush's and Cheney's oil and gas buddies. At the same time that the Enron and other corporate scandals were unraveling all across the country. We now know, for example, that Kenny Boy Lay, who was one of the members of the task force, did you hear, by the way, the nickname that George W. Bush gave Rumsfeld? Now, Louise, you're going to have to type it in for me. Was it Stud Rummy or was it Rum Stud? It was Rum Stud, wasn't it? And we just heard this on the news the other day. I'll have it for you in a second. As California tried to avoid implementing rolling blackouts in the spring of 2001, Mr. Cheney, fresh from his party dance with the energy barons, decreed that the federal government would not impose energy price caps. Yep, Rum Stud. This is what George, you know, George W. has this habit of giving people nicknames. It's something powerful people do to assert their authority. They're saying essentially that they're so much bigger than you and so much more powerful than you that they can change your name. And he calls Rumsfeld Rumstud. Rumstud. Yes, it's Rumstud. Anyhow, Cheney says no to price caps in California. California goes down the tubes. And then when Enron goes belly up, what do we find when we start looking through the documents? Enron engineered the whole thing. Well, not all alone. There were several other companies, energy companies involved in it. Enron was one of the major players in sticking it to the people of California. If the Supreme Court rules to open up the proceedings of the energy meetings, says Philip James in The Guardian, if the Supreme Court rules to open up the proceedings, it will surely offer a damning illustration of how this White House puts corporate greed above the most basic needs of the ordinary citizen. Well, you know, maybe it looks that way from England, but I got to tell you, Mr. James, we've already figured that out. I mean, it is just so apparent in everything that is going on here in the United States that this is just, you know, that this administration is putting these things first. Okay, here's moving along here. In a blow to its reputation as a science-based agency, the Food and Drug Administration, this was last week, rejected the over-the-counter sales of the emergency contraceptive Plan B. Now, the agency's only own expert advisory panel had voted 23-4 to make this an over-the-counter drug. That's a pretty solid majority. And then the question whether it should be so, that was late last year. And then this year they voted 27-0 that the drug could be safely sold as an over-the-counter medication. Officially, the FDA is supposed to base its decision about converting a drug to over-the-counter status on a very narrow issue, whether the drug can be used safely and effectively without the supervision of a physician. However, in this case, the Wall Street Journal reports, in a New England Journal of Medicine editorial in April, three physicians, including one on the FDA panel, slammed the agency for allowing politics to affect the deliberations. A treatment for any other condition, from hangnail to headache to heart disease, with a similar record of safety and efficacy, would be approved quickly, they wrote. But not this. Why? Because it's not just about abortion. The morning after pill stops conception from happening before it has begun. The egg has been fertilized, but it has not implanted itself in the wall of the uterus. It's not yet a fetus. It's just, you know. So it's not causing an abortion. It's preventing a pregnancy. So why does the religious right care? Because they are anti-birth control, as well as anti-abortion. People forget the official position of the Catholic Church is that there should be no birth control. Birth control was illegal in the United States in most states up until 1964. In the case of, what was it, Corrigan versus the state of Connecticut? This is what it's all about. Let's ban birth control. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely, because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitsky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order 2 bottles of Dr. Toplitsky's Super Prostate
formula. You'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
The permafrost in northern Sweden is becoming less permanent as the earth grows warmer. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Some soil in northern regions has been frozen for years and normally does not thaw out even in the summer. That's changing in the subarctic tundra of northern Sweden, and scientists are watching new plants move in and methane gas leak out. Torben Christensen is a biogeochemist at Sweden's Lund University. He says the annual mean temperature of the subarctic is right around freezing. He says the permafrost can start melting if the long-term temperature goes up by even half a degree.
That's where the stability of the permafrost is on its edge, and you need very small changes in temperature to actually have fairly substantial effects on the permafrost.
A research station in Sweden has compiled data that reveal how warming trends have affected the permafrost. The Abisko Research Station is north of the Arctic Circle, and people there have collected climate readings for more than 100 years. Christensen compared records from 1970 to 2000, and he found some dramatic changes in vegetation during those 30 years. He says wetland plants have moved into areas where the permafrost has disappeared and native tundra vegetation was gone. The soil in the tundra becomes much wetter as the permafrost melts. Those wet conditions produce methane gas during the decomposition of dead vegetation, and methane is a potent greenhouse gas. Christensen and his colleagues say the observations at the Abisko Research Station might be a picture of things to come across the Arctic. If more permafrost melts, more and more of the tundra might start releasing methane gas, and that could magnify the impact of greenhouse gases on global warming. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Is the Tom Hartman Program.
You can stand with a stick, free Teflon, whitewash presidency. We're sick of being jerked around. Wear that on your sleeve. Broadcast me a joyful noise into the times. Lord, count your blessings. We're sick of being jerked around. We all fall down.
And welcome back. 4 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Even Colin Powell is being misled. The White House is not only misleading the American public about the costs of war, notes the Center for American Progress's John Podesta. It is even misleading top national security officials in its own administration. According to USA Today, Secretary of State Colin Powell was not told of the new $25 billion request for Iraq, leaving Powell in the embarrassing position of, quote, telling members of the Congressional Black Caucus that no new funding request would be forthcoming, end quote, just days before the request became public. You get this? Rumstud and Cheney. I wonder what Cheney's nickname is. The Dick? Who knows? Well, who knows? I don't know. Anyhow, Rumstud and Cheney had already, you know, told George W. that he was going to have to ask for more money. And here goes Colin Powell, the good soldier, to talk to the Congressional Black Caucus, and he says, we're not going to need any more money. Don't worry. And these guys think that, you know, he's telling the truth, and it is the truth as he knows it. And these guys think that he has a clue about what's going on inside the administration, that he has some power and authority, and that he's taken seriously. And unfortunately, that is not the case. They are tolerating him because he is so widely respected by the American people, or at least was until his disgraceful performance before the United Nations. And it turns out
that he spent a couple of nights just, you know, frantically going through material before the UN, you know, this story has come out, that he was just frantically going through material before the UN presentation. And everybody thought he must be digging for lies, right? He's looking for stuff that he can put in there that's going to convince them. Where are the lies? Here, I need good stuff. And increasingly it's looking like, and, you know, Woodward's book seems to confirm this, that really what he was doing was he was trying to weed out the lies. He was desperately looking for anything he could use because he was concerned about his own reputation. He knew that he was being asked to go in and lie. So, I don't know. I've got some problems with Colin Powell, but he's still, considering the company he keeps, he's still a decent man, I think. Well, relatively speaking, shall we say. Anyhow, thanks to Louise for producing our program today, to Brad Walrod for our music, to Shelby at radiopower.org for streaming it on the web, and Ben Birch for holding our archives there. Thanks to Jay for producing our music, writing and performing it, the music you're hearing right now. Thanks to our sponsors, and thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. See you again tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.